Hi, this is Amherst Eclectic, and I am back to talk about an article that I saw. It's something that came up in my Facebook, and it's basically talking about the difference, the conflicting way that men and women are relating to sex and how society relates to sex with men and women, and how we see that, etc. I guess I'll just start reading the article. It's a rather long article, but I might just comment in between. But I found it really interesting and related to what we talk about on this channel a lot. And it basically starts out this way. Men are obsessed with sex, according to this article by Steve Bierman in the Elephant Journal, and it's reposted on several websites. Men are thought to think about sex all the time and allowed to be sexual all the time. For women, that is pretty different. We will be frequently judged as either a whore or a saint or a slut or a prude. It's very difficult to navigate this being a young woman today, and comes with a very ambivalent attitude towards our sexual nature. Not having sex with men can lead to feeling insecure, while having sex with men may risk earning a bad reputation, and showing your sexuality may put you at risk for abuse, too. Which, me, myself, I find that in this day and age, that those archaic attitudes still exist. It's just crazy. It's just crazy that we still put blame on women's sexuality. We make it dark and dirty and nasty, when really it's just a natural thing that I've discussed in the past on other podcasts that everyone has. Everyone has a natural desire for sex. Just like every animal on the face of the planet, it is meant for us to procreate and to, you know, keep the species alive. That's basically what we were made for. Now, humans are doing it way too often, and we have overpopulated the planet, which is, you know, we've killed off, because of the things that we've done, millions of other species that have gone extinct because of us, and climate change, global warming, pollution, etc., etc., because we are overpopulating the planet. I mean, humans are almost like a virus that is invading the planet. That would be like if a virus got inside your body and just took over. That's what humans are. We are a virus. And because so many countries are more concerned about, you know, having the largest population, those governments don't do anything to curb the population, right? Because they want to have the biggest armies, and they want to have more people to do work, and, you know, basically to slave away at making money for the government, the higher-ups, or the wealthy. So, you know, birth control is not put into play. We're not seriously talking about what overpopulation does. The number one reason for climate change and global warming is overpopulation. And, you know, people try to argue with me on that, and I can get them every time. That's the truth. If we were not overpopulating this planet, there wouldn't be those problems. Okay, so when we get back to the subject of, you know, it's just a natural thing that we have. Sex is natural. I think everyone should enjoy sex. Everyone should like sex. But I also think everyone should use birth control, and we shouldn't be overpopulating the planet. Okay, back to the article. Now, I don't just want to talk about how it's unfair that men get praised by having many women, while women are shamed for the reverse. I want to go further. Bierman says we're socialized as gendered beings from our birth up, which is so true, and that we have almost no experience of relating to human beings not on the basis of their gender. This is indeed a huge issue, yet he completely overlooks the female experience and the similarities there are with the male one. Yes, the socialization processes are different, but there's much overlap in the results. Note, I'm here only speaking about Western cultures, as these processes may be different in other cultures. Very true. Okay, be a big girl. For those who did not read the article, according to Behrman, boys are no longer cuddled when they grow up and are taught that they are better than girls and to develop competitive relationship with other boys. Moreover, men are socialized not to show sadness or fear, but instead demonstrate often reckless behavior. The competition results in violence-based groups, where there is both competition inside the group and both groups and between the groups. And the repression of the feelings result in the desensitization of the body. So that's what this guy's, the article she's referring to and writing about says. Girls, in my experience, are allowed to be afraid and sad, but only to a very limited extent. To be a big girl means to toughen up and swallow these emotions down. After all, the men set the standard in Western culture. If we are too emotional, the men around us will want to be close to us or discredit our intellectual capacities, as if emotional expression is something irrational and therefore a bad thing to do. And indeed, most boys don't want to play with girls. But they get interested as they age. We are surprised at first until we discover that it's not our intellect that they're interested in, but our bodies. So now our intellect is also something that should rather not be shown too much. If we want to be desirable to men, at least not to the extent he will feel threatened, and we want to be desired by men, by them, because that somehow proves our value to others around us. Some girls may even feel obliged to engage in sex with men because she has come to believe that their desires are always more important than hers. And I agree with this. And I think that's why a lot of girls don't report rapes, don't report sexual assault, because they've been taught that by the men in their lives, their own fathers, uncles, brothers, that they're not important. The way that they feel sexually, emotionally, they're not important, which is really sad. It's really sad. Okay, so many teenage girls have learned to suppress their emotions and even hiding their full intellectual capacity for men, and they start to focus on their looks to gain the attention of boys who changed their attitude towards them as they aged. This increases competition between women. In other words, like boys, girls now also start to compete and develop competition within their circle of friends and between groups. Now I'm going to stop here because this has come into life. My life come into play in my life so many ways, and I have never been that way. I have never wanted to compete. I have always been one of those people that either somebody is interested in you or they're not. And I'll tend to bow out if another woman is interested in somebody, because I just feel like there's enough to go around for everyone. You know, there's enough. If it's just not worth the emotional strife and the physical strife of fighting over someone. You know, either somebody wants to be with you or they don't, and they'll make it very, very apparent if they do. You know, and I've ended up with some pretty great guys, and I always have women asking me how I find these guys. I don't find them, they find me, because to me, if someone's interested in you, they will show interest. And, you know, I have to show interest also. I have to make sure that those people know I'm interested in them. And, you know, there's been times I've been interested in people and they weren't interested in me. And so I didn't get upset about it or insulted by it. I just moved on. You know, there's billions of people on the planet. Why do I have to settle for just one person? I don't have to. That's called obsession. And I don't want to be obsessed with anyone. That's just a sickness. But yeah, I mean, I have had women go behind my back and sleep with guys that I was dating, that I had just started dating, and they just slept with them just so they could take them away from me. Well, I wasn't really in a relationship with that person. I was dating them, trying to get to know them, and if they're going to go off and sleep with one of my friends or even one of my acquaintances, then they just told me who they are. So I just move on. So for me, I've never been in that, but it has caused me a lot of problems with other women who are in that sort of infighting and that sort of competition for men. because then they don't like me because that person that they want likes me, not them, and so forth and so on. So it affects your life even when you don't participate in it. You know what I mean? Even when you're not competitive. Because all these other women have been taught that they have to be competitive. Or they think that they have to be competitive. I've never been that way. But anyway. Okay. Moving away. We're back to the article. Moving away from the commodification of sex. Competition is the central concept of capitalism, which is a major element in Western culture. The competition and commodification that enhance economic growth become part of our mindset and shape both men and women. With commodification, I mean that nearly anything is converted into consumption goods so that the economy can grow. And as we rely on a monetary system for our survival, since many people turn away from growing their own food, economic growth is essential. We even call it earning a living, as if we don't deserve to live if we don't earn money. That's such a great point. And that also goes back to my attitudes on why we should feed everyone, why we should house everyone. Because it really helps us as a society to make sure that everyone is fed, everyone is taken care of, everyone is housed. Because what happens in homeless populations or when people are starving, you get diseases that creep up. We've had diseases that were stomped out that came back in homeless populations because they were not being given medical care. And they were living in squalor, right? And suffering. So those diseases come back because they're being brought back from, I don't know, many times it's rodents that are coming over on ships from other countries, things like that. But because we aren't housing people, keeping things clean, feeding people, making sure they have medical care, making sure they have vaccines, making sure that everything is taken care of, then those diseases are starting to come back up into regular populations, into even wealthier populations. You know, there have been wealthier people who have caught these diseases that break out in homeless camps or homeless populations, which, i.e., is why we should be taking care of homeless people, why we should be taking care of people who are struggling, why we should be taking care of people who are in poverty. You know, when we have housing that is rat infested, that doesn't help anybody. That just makes things worse for everyone, right? That's just, you know, it's not just my opinion, it is fact. And in every society, it proves itself every single day when our governments and our societies don't take care of people who are struggling. Okay, back to the article. It is the context or way of thinking that turns sex into a commodity that sells. We get bombarded by sexual images through the television, advertising, and pornography. As Bierman, this previous author that we're discussing, this article is discussing, also notices. Mostly the object of the sexual images are women. And so the competition in having the most desirable body is not even just among peers, but extends to models shown in the poster, magazines, television, and videos on the internet. These images often give girls and women the impression their bodies are not beautiful, or at best, disgusting at worst. And also here we see a duality. There's a kind of identification with the body at one level, where my body is not as beautiful as the picture means I am not beautiful as a person. And there is a disassociation on another level because she has been taught to suppress her emotions and she receives the message that her outer beauty is more important than what's inside. Personally, I have been quite focused on developing myself mentally during my teenage years and early 20s, but this mental focus also meant I was not connected to my body, and I sometimes felt insecure whether I was beautiful enough. Moreover, the fear of judgment made it impossible to express myself freely sexually. One of my friends told me she felt obliged to engage in sex with men when she was younger because she had come to believe that her desires were less important than those of men. Another friend was molested as a girl and grew up wanting to be a boy. These are all the examples of disassociation in different ways. The point is that female bodies become an object of desire and something that men can also possess, even if it were only for a short time. So, back to me and my opinion on this. So that's why you see, you know, women wanting to dress like men, women wanting to possibly be a lesbian, women wanting to be, and I'm not saying that that's not a choice, but I do think there are people who, you know, they see that men are treated better in society, and so they have this feeling of wanting to be men, be more like men. So that they, and now there's even people getting sex changes to be men. And the funny thing is that these women who have now had a sex change to become a man, they see the huge difference in how they were treated before and how they're treated now as men, you know, as they look like men out in society. And it's a huge difference. And it's sad. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. Just like racism, sexism is the same thing, right? Just about sex. Okay, back to the article. Conflicting attitudes towards sex. For boys, sex is depicted as a solution to their isolated experience, since it is a way to show their vulnerability and experience intimacy, according to Bierman. Unfortunately, I have to disagree here. There are indeed men who show their vulnerability and are genuinely open and intimate. But I've noticed that many men go after sex as some kind of competition, and also see it as a way to validate their worthiness, just the same way girls and women do. And that is because of commodification. Sex is something to have, not to experience. Moreover, they see women as objects to satisfy their need to release tension, which they, of course, have built up in our competitive society. Such men have no regard for women's needs, and although some women may perceive this as normal, quote-unquote, I can't imagine they don't experience it also as quite painful, and the cycle goes on, women repress that emotion and continue to offer their bodies, which they have now disassociated themselves from. And I've seen that in my own life. I've shared that I will not be with someone intimately if it's all about them. If it's just going to be wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, or it's just going to be about their desires and their orgasm and their, just, it's all going to be about the man, you're not going to get to be with me. You do that to me one time, you have an orgasm and I don't have an orgasm, you're gone. I don't need anybody like that in my life. Life is too short for things to not be 50-50 reciprocal. And I have found men that are like that. And thank God I've been able to find them. Now, I have shared my story about one man who wasn't like that. And after our first sexual experience, I said, you're out. And he begged and begged and begged and begged to get back into my life, said that things would be different. And it was. He changed. But I don't think he even realized. Well, I'm sure he realized. But I told him, that's why these women keep breaking up with you. Because you're selfish. You're self-centered. You don't care about anybody else. It shows when you get in the bedroom. And if you're like that all the time, then why would I want to be in a relationship with you? That's not a relationship. That's just a one-night stand, or that's just someone who's using somebody else, and that's all. I don't want to be with somebody like that. So if that's how men are being taught, they're going to fail over and over at their relationships. If you see a guy that just keeps going through relationships, it's because he is selfish. He may even be selfish in the bedroom. And finally, a woman just gets tired of that, because she can find someone who is not. Right? Okay. Back to the article. Thus, for her, sex is not the solution to intimacy at all. She develops some kind of conflicting, even contradicting attitudes towards sex. On the one hand, she has to engage in sex to prove her value and be desirable to men. On the other hand, she cannot show sexual desire because that would make her extremely vulnerable to men that are only out to exploit her, i.e. for sex. So with every guy she meets that's interested, she tries to understand how acceptable her behavior will be. However, can't she avoid to get labeled as a prude, nerd, or promiscuous slut? The archetypes of the saint and the whore are centuries old, but are valid until today. Which is really sad. That's me. That's me talking. Back to Oracle. As it seems nearly impossible to escape the judgments, both from men and perhaps even more so from fellow women. Which, you know, that's something that I keep trying to tell women. Like when I hear women say things or they comment on social media, I try to make them understand that they're a misogynist. They are so steeped in a patriarchal society that they now, as females, have misogynist ideas which directly go against their own person, right? If you are thinking like a misogynist male, you're not helping yourself nor any other woman on the face of the planet. And if you're speaking that way, thinking that way, you know, dealing in the world that way, you're making things worse for women all over the world and for yourself. And it doesn't make any sense that you would go against your own female gender, your own self, by saying and doing the things in a misogynist way. But I think sometimes women are so steeped in misogyny that they don't even know they're doing it half the time. Okay, back to the article. Getting in touch with passion. On the other hand, fortunately, it is true that sex can create a marvelous place for intimacy and connection, pleasure and nourishment. And Bierman asked, as an important question, what happens to human beings who have been since early in life isolated from intimate connections with other people, cut off from their own feelings, and numbed bodily awareness? He suggests that passion, as opposed to obsession and repression, is the answer. Not more sex, because they will never fulfill the need for love and intimacy that we all have. So it's rather the quality than quantity of sex that we have which matters. And that is an important realization for both men and women. For men, as they can stop an endless unsatisfactory chase for sexual partners. And for women, as they can start to get in touch with their intuition and true feelings, rather than fighting a hopeless battle against the judgments of others. Quote, passion, not repression, is our greatest ally in the battle to liberate our complete humanity, unquote. Bierman beautifully words. We need to reclaim intimacy, our feelings, and our bodies, and here I very much agree with his conclusion. We can experiment with creating intimacy, not just on a sexual level. That also opens up the possibility to do so with people we're not attracted to, so we can separate intimacy from sex. We both, men and women, have to start to notice, recognize, and understand our feelings. Centering yourself in passion also means we reconnect to our sensuality, which goes further than sexuality. Experiencing the feelings of grass on our bare feet, water on our skin, under the shower, or the taste of your food in your mouth. I was just watching a video the other day of a blind child, a little baby girl. She wasn't baby, she was probably about 2, who just kept putting her hands into the water that was running under the faucet. She loved, and then she would put her head under it and her arm, and she just loved the feeling of the water on her skin. And she's blind, right? And so, you know, we don't know what that experience is like. She can't see the water. She can't see it coming out of the faucet. She doesn't know it's coming, but she likes the feeling of the water. And we all love taking showers or the feeling of the water on our skin, but her senses are heightened about that, right? So it was kind of a beautiful video to watch because she was just so open to that feeling, right? And so it's the same thing for us as human beings when it comes to sex or sexuality. You know, if you start looking at it a different way, say like this child looking at the, you know, doesn't see the water, she's feeling it. If you really start experiencing emotions within sex and all the things that come with sex, you know, beyond just raw, you know, bang, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, right? It's, what are you feeling? What's happening to your body? What are the sensations? Da, 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 da. When you really start getting into that part of it, that's when you start talking about the tantric sex, like, you know, like Sting and his partner have talked about. You really start to realize what it does to your body, what it does to your soul, what it does to your mind, all and your emotions. So then sex stops being this just quick, you know, get some fulfillment just to get a quick orgasm. Then it starts being intimacy. Then it starts being making love rather than just having sex. And I'm not saying you can't have sex. You know, sometimes you just have to have fun and just have sex. But making love is a lot more fulfilling, right? Okay, onward. How to overcome ambivalence and attain a wholesome attitude. Back to the article here. I'd like to propose a few more tools to follow Bierman's advice and move beyond the conflicting ambivalent attitude women have towards sex. First, spend some time observing what is going on in your body and mind. Meditation is a great way to do that, but writing can help as well. Meditation has really helped me a great deal with reconnecting with my body and understanding what it says. You can also start to thank your body for all the marvelous things that it does for you each day, helping you to function in this world. That way you will start to love it with all its flavors and beauties. To find more sensuality, you can develop your creative skills. I believe that creativity is a very similar energy to sexuality, if not the same, since penetrative sex leads to the creation of children. If we do not obstruct this natural process, a child also carries the genes of both the woman and the man and is therefore the manifestation of the feeling of unity that can be experienced in sex, particularly during an orgasm. That, by the way, also aids the process of fertilizing the egg. And what she's talking about is if both the man and the woman have an orgasm every single time you have sex, the chance of becoming pregnant goes up exponentially. So if you're trying to get pregnant or have a baby, both people having an orgasm every time you have sex makes it more likely that you are going to get pregnant. And so that just shows you why both people having an enjoyable sexual experience is a positive thing. And is a good thing. And that is what Mother Nature meant it to be. That is what we were created for. It's not for a man to have an orgasm and not women. No, it's for both of us to have an orgasm. So both parties should be making sure the other one is always having an orgasm. And if a guy keeps having orgasms and you don't, kick him out the door, because I can guarantee you'll find a guy who will make sure that you do. Or vice versa. Right? Okay. Creative expression can be, we're back to Ariel. Creative expression can be another way to honor the unity that we all long for and find some kind of connection in this feeling without relying on sex. Thirdly, and perhaps most importantly, women have to come together with other women to discuss these socialization processes that I'm describing. Why I started this podcast? You know, it's not just for women, but I would really love it if more women understood that they deserve the great sexual experiences that they deserve and that not to settle for anything less. Okay, back to the article. Okay, this is what I did, and I want to thank my fellow sisters for the insights I'm now sharing with you. If we had not discussed with each other how we relate to our sexuality and our bodies, men, each other, I would not have seen that we have a very calming experience, that we can feel so much strength when sharing our struggles and listening to each other with compassion. These meetings also lay the foundation for us to connect in different ways to men, because when we can go beyond competition and trust women, we can start to trust men. Then we can approach them more openly and relaxed. When we create trusting feelings with men, we don't have to feel so vulnerable anymore, because we can express our sexuality in a safe way without feeling neglected or disrespected. I think that we start to speak about our fears also to men. Only in that way we can overcome them. We should never allow anyone to disrespect us. Ditto! and set clear boundaries. Know that you are never obliged to do anything and always free, and you're always free to stop. Practice this with someone you can feel safe with, perhaps. This way you can turn a feeling of vulnerability and fear for rejection possibility into strength. Also express what you want and tell men that you find that a bit scary if you do. From my personal experience, I can say it helps with feeling more free in your sexual experience. So in conclusion, women will have to get more in touch with their feelings and bodies, experience positive, connective, intimate sex based on a recognition of each other's needs and mutual respect, and of course, fueled by a healthy passion. We thus need to overcome the habit of commodification and understand that competition can be destructive for our well-being while recognizing that it's useful in some circumstances, but we need to find ways to liberate ourselves from the heaviness of each other's judgments. These judgments and expectations disconnect both men and women from themselves. You can start by observing your body and mind, connecting to your body, expressing gratitude for it. We can find intimacy outside of sex, connect to our creative abilities, and connect and share with other women. With awareness, we can create a sex-positive culture, which is exactly why I started this podcast, together. When we can leave the fears for judgments and stop judging ourselves, I am hopeful that women can finally overcome internal conflicts with regards to sexuality and the shame, doubts, and shyness that come with it, and that we can embrace the sensual and sexual part of ourselves fully, full-heartedly, then men and women can experience the intimacy everybody longs for so much. And that's kind of what I have been trying to talk about in these podcasts, whenever I speak to women and men. The best thing that you can do is to connect fully on an intimate level with your partner. Whether that be a man and a woman, whether it be two women, two men, however. One partner cannot be the one that's getting everything out of it in the way that they want. It has to be two people getting something out of it, or this is going to affect your whole relationship. And I know a lot of people say, well, sex is not, you know, it's not a big deal, da da da. Yes, it is. Intimacy is a big deal. That is how we were made as human beings. We long for that intimacy. We long for someone to understand us in a way that no one else understands us on a social level, you know, on a friendship level, but we also long for that on an intimate sexual level, right? And when you do find someone that you can be, like, they're your best friend, they understand you, they don't judge you, they're not abusing you in any way, shape, or form, whether it be physically, psychologically, emotionally, financially. They're not doing any of that crap to you. When you come to that sort of a level where you know you can trust somebody, fully trust them, and they're not going to hurt you in any way, and they fully love you for who you are, just the way you are, you know, yeah, there's going to be maybe a few things that annoy people. There always is. Nobody's perfect. But you can trust somebody that they just love you how you are. That is when sexuality and intimacy become so much better. And I wish that for everyone. I wish that for everyone. I wish that you would walk away and deny what these negative messages from society are telling you. I wish that you would just come within your own self and with your partner and realize what you want. But first of all, you have to realize what you want as a person, right? And then you have to look at what you've been taught by your society that is negative, and kind of switch that off or put that to the side or relearn things for yourself so you can have better relationships with other people in your life. It might mean spending some time alone and doing some self-evaluation. You know, that's what all those self-help books are for. So you can sit down, read it. I mean, you know, when I went through my breakups, I've gone through a couple breakups that were kind of devastating for me, even though I was the one who walked away from those relationships because they were obviously not going to work. And I knew that they needed to end, but it was a time that I really had to look at myself and the choices that I made, and why did I choose this person? Why did it come out badly? What was my part in that relationship? What were the things that I did wrong? What were the things that I should have done better? How could I have helped it to become different or better in that relationship? You know, you can't always point at the other person and not take responsibility for your part in a relationship. You have to look at what you did, you know, and when you did it and how you did it. And it's funny, you know, you may not totally realize things right away. It may take a year or two, you know, down the line when maybe you're still single and you're still looking at yourself. Or maybe you start a new relationship 2 years later with somebody when you're ready. Don't rush into relationships. There's psychological proof that for every year you're in a marriage or a serious relationship, it takes a year to 2 years to recover from that relationship. So you really should wait before you get involved with someone else. Now, I'm not telling people if you've been in a 20, 30-year relationship, wait another 20, 30 years. No. But realize that you're probably still going to be recovering from the loss of that relationship while you're in a new relationship. And that's something that your partners need to understand too, that you're both have past relationships and you're both still going to be sort of recovering from those relationships. And you shouldn't be, you know, when someone realizes something or has a light bulb moment about something that happened in their past relationship, you shouldn't take that as, oh, they want to be back with that person. No, it's just the time has gone by. The walls of denial have come down. The masks have come off. They've relearned things about themselves emotionally. And then all of a sudden they realize, oh my God, that's what I did in that relationship, or oh my God, that's what they were doing in that relationship. This is why we didn't work out. Those are good things for them to realize, especially if they're in a relationship with you, if they're realizing the things that they could have made better, or the things that someone else did that maybe they're noticing caused a problem. That's only going to make your relationship better once they realize what has happened. So don't always think that because people are having aha moments, light bulb moments, realizations about their past relationship, that that means they want to be in that relationship. No. It just means that, you know, the denial that they were in, that they didn't want to admit their part in it, maybe, right? Or they didn't want to, or it was too painful to realize what that other person did to them. So they had to sort of put it in a back part of their consciousness because they couldn't deal with it at the time. It was just too painful, right? And now they're able to deal with it now that they're starting to heal, or maybe because they're starting to feel more loved by the new partner that they're with. So now they're able to deal with those things. So, and they feel safe in being able to bring that out of their back of their consciousness to deal with it now because they're in a loving relationship. All of the things come out. But you cannot let that affect you in your new relationship. It does take time. It does take time to heal. And sometimes it takes years and years to heal, especially if you've been in a long-term relationship. But those realizations are good things. Now, if somebody is, you know, talking about their ex too much, then yeah, they probably want to go back to their ex. So, you know, you might want to reevaluate your relationship if they're talking about their exes too much. maybe they're not ready for a relationship yet, need to be alone to get over that relationship. Anyway, so I think that, you know, if we can just get rid of the socializations that we have from society, telling men that they have to be a certain way, telling women that they have to be a certain way, and kind of put that aside and then come to a realization of who you want to be in a relationship, of what you need in a relationship, that's more of a healthy way of looking at things. And again, if you are having, if you're in an intimate situation in sex and you're not getting everything you need, you're not having the orgasms, or you're not feeling fulfilled, or you're not having the greatest orgasms. Like, they should be the greatest. This should be the, you know, when you're in a relationship, every time you make love, it should get better, you know, because you both are learning more about each other, not just as friends and as people and that sort of thing, but you're learning more about each other and what you need in the bedroom, right? You're learning what your partner likes, things that they like, the way they like to be touched, what excites them, what makes them, you know, have a longer orgasm, or what makes them stay excited longer, so that you can have longer lovemaking sessions, right? Particularly on both sides. You know, a guy staying erect for a longer period of time is no different than a woman staying excited, which would be an internal erection, and being able to continue to have orgasms. You know, people say multiple orgasms for both men and women are rare. No, it's not. Not if you're doing it right. Not if you're doing it right. It is not rare. You just need to take the time to make your partner, and your partner needs to take the time to make you feel safe, secure, trusted, loved. And then all that stuff's going to come. But you have to be willing to be very emotional. You have to be willing to be very open with your partner. You can't be closed off. And you have to open yourself up to people. And that can be scary for a lot of people, particularly men. Maybe even more so women, because they're not getting what they need, and they're not trusting the person in the bedroom. If your partner, men, is not having an orgasm every single time you make love, you're not doing it right. I'm sorry. You're just not doing it right. And if you are doing it right, and she's not having orgasm, then there's something maybe she needs to go to a sex therapist. Same thing reverse for men. If things aren't going right for men, it could be a psychological issue, you know? But 9 times out of 10, you can work it out. I have never been with anyone in my life that we didn't have amazing sex. We always had amazing sex. And there were relationships I've had problems with people in, and there's relationships that were wonderful relationships, you know, but the sex was always amazing, because I insisted that I know what they need, and I insisted that they know what I need. And if you are open and honest in a relationship, that's what comes of it. And I think that a lot of times when I walked away from relationships, that's why the men in my life didn't want me to walk away, because it was maybe, I'm not sure, not positive, I was not in their past relationships, but maybe it was the first time that someone who was totally open and honest with them, giving to them, and also very giving in intimacy. Because I just don't see any reason not to be. Life's too short, right? If you're in a relationship, you want to get everything out of that relationship you possibly can. You're not going to force somebody to do that. It has to be given freely. And you can't hold on to somebody. You know, if somebody's ready to leave, they're going to leave. Or if somebody's ready to move on, they're going to move on. And you have to accept it. It can be painful. All of those things. You have to let that person be who they want to be. And if it's not working out that it's what you want in a partner, then you just have to end it and go find someone who is going to be more what you need in a partner. And all breakups are tough. It's hard to walk away from people. There's a lot of really wonderful things about my past relationships and those people that I miss. I miss it. I had a partner who was very, very adventurous. We would go, hiking out in the parks, and I probably did more with him than I ever did with anyone in my life because he was more adventurous and willing to take a few risks here and there. Not too risky though, but it was those parts that I miss because I haven't, I, it's hard to find even friends and family members or anybody who will do the things that I was doing with him. Not a lot of people want to go camping out in the woods. A lot of people want to go hike up a mountain. Just because, a lot of people don't want to explore nature and things like that because they're too afraid to go out and do it, So yeah, there's things about that relationship that I miss. That's a big part of what I miss with that relationship. There are people that, love to go to concerts and dancing and that sort of stuff, operas, and they were open to that, And then, there are a lot of guys who they did all that at the beginning just to reel me in, and then they wouldn't do it after they thought they had me. Those relationships ended. So, find out what your partner likes, not only in life, not only in work, not only in with family members, etc., but find out what they like in the bedroom. Make sure that you are having a mutually enjoyable experience in the boudoir, and just write off all the societal things that have been taught to you. This guy is saying that people are trapped in those society norms that they've been taught. Well, you're not if you just say, you know what, I'm not gonna listen to that anymore. I'm gonna look at what I want and what I need and what I think. And as time goes on, all of those societal norms that you were taught, you're going to be like, wow, that's really stupid. Because that's how I was. I was like, all that stuff is really dumb. I really don't want to listen to it. It's between me and this person. And it's what happens between us. And I know what I want. I know what I need. And I've had to get past some of those societal norms myself of what I thought it was supposed to be. But in the end, each relationship is a new beginning. There are no, this is how it's supposed to be in any relationship because every relationship is different. Every person is different. You're starting with a clean slate from the very beginning of that relationship as you move forward. So, all right. But I just thought that was an interesting article talking about how women are sort of stuck in these sexual roles. And I think, ladies, you just have to realize you're not stuck. And you don't have to accept what society is telling you. It's your life. It's too short to not live it your way and to not be happy in every part of your life. And make sure that you are as much as you can. And, I tell women this all the time. You don't have to have a man to have an orgasm. There are plenty of sex toys out there, plenty of ways to make yourself orgasm. Find out what that feels like, and if it's not happening between you and someone else in the boudoir, then they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, right? Of course, it's going to be sometimes better when you're using a vibrator, or sometimes it's going to be better when you're with somebody. And what I found, people say, well, a vibrator is always better than a man. No. If he's doing it right, he'll beat that vibrator every day. He'll beat that vibrator every day. If you're having very fulfilling and intimate relationships and very fulfilling and intimate sex, vibrators are not gonna outdo anyone. The real thing is always better. But vibrators are a good second close if you're not having orgasms at all. And there's the joke that women have men who aren't giving them, fulfilling them in the bedroom, so they've got the vibrator and they're using that when the men aren't around. Well, if that's the case, why have him around at all? If you're having a better orgasm with a vibrator, why have the man around at all? Just be friends. Anyway, so again, thought this was an interesting article. Thought it brought up some good points, but it always seems to come back to you need to decide that you want to be happy, and you need to make sure that your relationships in every aspect are living up to what you need. You know, don't go beyond expectations, right? And expect way more than you should. But, you know, there are basic things that should be happening. If a guy's having an orgasm, you should be having an orgasm, and vice versa. And if he's having this outlandish great orgasm and you're not, well, then he's only doing it for himself and not for you. So why be in an intimate relationship with somebody who isn't going to make you feel incredible as he feels, right? All right. Let me know what you think. How do you think that societal or social norms have affected you and your mental capacity to deal with sex or to deal with intimacy? And can you break free of those societal norms to move forward into something that you are doing for yourself, rather than listening to what everybody else is doing? And, you know, how does it affect how women treat you? How does it affect how men are treating you? I mean, I deal with that sort of stuff every day, and it's frustrating, but I sort of try to ignore it or stay away from people who are like that, and try to put people around me who don't think that way, who are a little more open-minded. And that's probably why I have a smaller group of close friends than I do a larger group. I mean, I have a larger group of acquaintances, but I usually try to stay away from people who are narrow-minded, especially when you get into the competition thing. When women start that kind of stuff, it just gets nasty, and it makes your life horrible, and you really don't want people like that around, which is why I narrowed my female friends down to a few very secure female friends who are also very beautiful, which is why they're more secure, I think, because, you know, they understand that, you know, getting a lot of attention for your beauty isn't everything. You have to find somebody who is going to be there for who you are. So let me know what you think about all that. You know, how does it affect your life? Message me, let me know what you think. Maybe I'll do another podcast, suggest another podcast that you think I should do. Until next time, Amorous Eclectic.